Library of Things? The Library of Things?
I'm George. I'm a volunteer. I call myself an anchor here. I'm here as a general dog's body for the rest of the...
This is the common room. Its most important role is as a public living room, and it's been open since September 2021, 5 days a week, 12 till 4.
And toys are available for children. There are plenty of nice, easy chairs for people to sit down, have a chit-chat.
The guy who owned it had been here 30 years, and he wanted to retire, middle of lockdown, couldn't sell his sofas, couldn't sell the place. So we took a development lease and the sofas. And so this is one of our latest buildings.
On a Friday or Saturday, they can bring their gadgets to have it repaired by a lady who knows a lot about electrical things.
For a long time, people kept coming in and asking to buy a sofa or a carpet. So many people, just we're so coded in the way we think everything is, and it, as if it has to be like that. The whole idea is that it's free, warm space where people are alongside each other, and it's interesting to me how quickly people move to service provision models, which are all about, you know, we are here to help you. That is not what this is supposed to be. And this is a very powerful concept that, like so many of the things we're involved in, is really simple and really human, but is actually really hard and quite radical, especially in the world as we find it. We're talking about, within the Hastings Commons, a scale that ranges from just sitting about next to each other to spending millions and millions of pounds renovating extremely complex buildings. So you have to do both. And one of the biggest failures of regeneration in all my lifetime that I've been watching it has been the separation of the social and the physical in regeneration. So the concept that you can do physical regeneration without social, and to some extent the other way around too, I just think is false. It's not the only problem, but it's at the heart of the problems that we've had with regeneration for three decades. I'm Jess Steele. I have lived in Hastings for 20 years. Before that, I was in Deptford in southeast London. My whole life, I've been an independent community entrepreneur and very much a watcher of regeneration. I've always said that Hastings has been the best place in the world, the best balance of cost of living and quality of life. And often you find those places because they're neglected for some reason, because no one else has noticed. And they're all threatened with what you might call gentrification. And that is to some extent what has happened to Hastings. Many people will be familiar with Hastings because of the Battle of Hastings in 1066. We do have a long history. It was a little fishing port for a while, you know, and then it grew over the years and it's changed in so many different ways. It has a deep history, and that history is kind of engraved on it in the sense of lots and lots of legacy assets. So we have Hastings Pier is an obvious one, but we also have theatres and all kinds of lifts, funiculars, all sorts of legacies that are left behind from a seaside heritage. It has been a very poor place for perhaps more than 100 years now. So Hastings suffers enormous challenges, but it does so with enormous grace. It has huge assets in both physical and, more importantly, people and community spirit. We have a packed programme of festivals, most of which are Hastings-only festivals. We call it the dressing up town. If you've got an excuse to dress up, people in Hastings will dress up. If you move to Hastings, you have to bring a dressing up box, you know, or you will build one while you're here. It's a fun place. And as I say, it's got a lot of strong community spirit and solidarity. It's a community of sanctuary. It's the sort of place that you can be yourself. You can be anyone. But it is also the end of the line. It is at the end of a absolutely rubbish train services and a comically poor road, the A21. And a lot of politicians have always argued we need, you know, we need high-speed trains and we need a motorway. And ever since I got here, I've thought, no, because the neglect is a blessing in disguise. And here, the blessing was that diversity and that affordability of property, you know, places to live and work and start businesses, do art, play music, were all possible. So now it's hugely threatened. The rents and the house prices have just gone up exponentially. And that is because, in a way, COVID blew the only fence we had down, the fence of the stigma. Shelley, come and say hello.
You've got to talk to Shelley because she's been here.
This is the worst thing in the world. This is a pink flamingo with a slightly weird wobbly neck. It's probably the most ghastly thing I've ever seen, so I bought it for my friend's birthday. It's impossible to describe, so just imagine your worst nightmare as a pen
like a broken
form.
Flamingo.
Yeah, and that would be it.
Anyway, Shelley.
Anyway, yes. And I help run the Hastings Library of Things, which is based in the Commons, and I've just popped in my lunch break, actually. And then got distracted with 3D printing. But people see the value of it quite quickly, although they often quite say, what happens if something gets broken? I bet stuff doesn't get given back. And we go, actually, nothing gets broken and it always gets given back.
What's the most over-borrowed?
It's just too boring, but it's a carpet cleaner. It's just so, so boring. I'd like to say it was the county floss machine, but it's
That's
not.
Great toilet. Thank you. Thank you. Good luck with the flamingo. God.
I've always been very much a sort of person of propositions. What shall we do about that? And so I've set up many community enterprises over the years, and I've been involved in many community campaigns. My first campaign in Hastings was to do with Hastings Pier. Long, long process. A lot of lessons out of that. One of them was that we would need to focus on the neighbourhood, not just the pier as a sort of historic artefact, but the whole neighbourhood. And that was always at the heart of the pier campaign. Once the pier was saved and we achieved compulsory purchase and £14.5 million to restore it with, I personally and many of us moved on to look at the rest of the neighbourhood. And the neighbourhood at the time basically was being massively dragged down by the Observer building, which had closed down in 1984, great big print factory, which had employed many, many people and then had closed. And there'd been four decades of dereliction with multiple owners, one after another, none of them ever doing any repairs, but somehow managing to make money out of it, mainly by getting planning permissions. So the Observer building is a kind of epitome of how terrible our systems are. It rotted away, dragging down the neighbourhood. And so after the pier, it was the most important thing to focus on. So we tried to buy the Observer building in 2014, but we lost out. It went to auction and we lost out to a private buyer. But meanwhile, in parallel, we'd been thinking about buying the building next door, which was a 1970 nine-storey office block. Very run down, almost nobody left in it. And that's what we ended up buying. And the we then was my company, Jericho Road Solutions, which I had set up in 2012 to try and help local leaders around the country to do neighbourhood regeneration, to support them in doing that. And always with the ambition that any money that I made out of it, I would invest in projects in Hastings. So Jericho Road Solutions, I was working alongside Meanwhile Space Community Interest Company, who take property that is paused in its process for some reason, so it's empty. They take that into uses that are good for the local community. So the two of us came together and bought what's now Rock House, this nine-storey office block. And we knew right from the start that this wasn't something that we just wanted to do ourselves. We wanted to do it in a way that it would always live with the community. It would stay. It would be sustainable long after we were gone. And so immediately we granted 10% of the shares in the company we set up together to a local community group. And over time that's turned into one third of the shares now are held by the Hastings Commons Community Land Trust. This area of Hastings was underwater 1,000 years ago. It was part of the sea. And then over the years, it became sea beach. It silted up and became beach. And then people began to move on to that site. And because it had been underwater, nobody owned it. So they didn't pay any rent to anybody. And it became quite an independent and very quirky and interesting group of people. By the 1820s, there were 1,000 people living and working on the space. And then in the 1820s, there was this royal commission to decide who owned the space, partly, apparently, because they kept falling out with each other and arguing and therefore becoming known to the authorities. So there was this commission, and it was decided, surprise, surprise, that the Crown owned the sea beach. And so the Crown surveyors turned up and started measuring everything and sending out rent bills. And so that group of people were displaced. Now, the legend goes that they raised the American flag, the Stars and Stripes, and declared independence, declared themselves the 24th state of the United States of America. And that brilliant, fascinating story, that legend, it's a very powerful... The serious side of it is that it was a battle for land that they lost and they were dispersed. The important thing is that that's a founding story for us. It's a founding story about, let's not do it like that then. Let's not let that happen. And that's why one of the reasons why freehold is so important, because nobody can take it off you. And obviously people can take it off you if you fail. You have to be extremely careful to protect it, and that's why the Community Land Trust is so important. Rock House, this is the building we bought first. And it goes up and up and up. It's 9 stories altogether. This area down here at the bottom of these steps, this is the America grounds. This was where it was all seen. Where that church is, the whole area. It's a big, big area. So we bought Rock House in 2014. We started to do the work. It took a long time because when we first bought it, we had this report that said it would cost $1.9 million to convert. We had £80,000 in the bank. So we got on with it slowly and did a phased organic development approach. That's what we call it looking back. At the time, we just scrabbled and tried to do our very best to do one floor at a time. During that time, we realised collectively we had meetings locally to talk about gentrification of Hastings. And so we had a series of meetings asking, is gentrification happening? If it is it a problem? And if it is a problem, is there anything we can do? And the conclusion was, yes, it was coming. But yes, it would be a problem and it would change the Hastings and this area particularly forever and potentially for the worst. And what could we do? There was one thing we could do, which was to bring more property into community ownership and cap the rents forever. So we'd already started doing that, but this clarified it and made it much more a community effort rather than just a few kind of social entrepreneurs saying this would be a good thing. It needs a community land trust. It needs a long-term organisation that will outlast us all. And so that was when the Community Land Trust was born. It became more and more that, like, the different organisations were the tools in the box to get the shared job done. And the shared job was bring difficult and derelict properties back from the brink, bring them into community ownership, renovate them, let them on capped rents, and manage them well forever. And that's what we've been doing ever since. And we've brought 8,000 square metres of property, a very weird range of property. We've got some caves, we've got a tumble-down stable, we've got a whole load of vaults, we've got a big roof terrace, and we've got this wonderful space. We'll go around the back, because this alley around the back is interesting because it wasn't underwater, it was a cliff. This land has never been owned by anybody, and it's never been adopted by a public authority. But the buildings either side, the Observer building itself, the print works, the library, they all have in their title deeds rights and responsibilities over 12 feet of the roadway. And you can see the road maybe is 15 feet wide. So from either side, those are overlapping rights and responsibilities. And that has been fascinating because for many, many years, the old idea of the tragedy of the commons was playing out here. People were taking their rights and not their responsibilities. And what we're doing is converting that away from that tragedy into the genuine positive commons, where people are looking out for the place and looking out for each other. And they're giving according to their ability and taking according to their need. So this is our scaffolding. This will eventually go, hopefully by Christmas. This kind of farming of dereliction, this is a phrase that really captures my imagination and makes me think exactly of what's happening in these places, is that dereliction is farmed both by the private sector through getting planning permissions and selling on and never bothering with any kind of repair, and by the public sector, by allowing dereliction to form, which then turns you into part of, you know, a regeneration zone. Both of them are behaving the same way. disinvestment and investment being two sides of the same coin and maintenance being nowhere to be seen. The basic idea of just darning the fabric, maintaining what we've got, making it better bit by bit, that is missing from our discourse. And every time government comes out with another sets of billions of pounds, they are talking about shiny new stuff rather than gentle repair and piecemeal approaches. This is a much more feminised approach to regeneration. And I think it's interesting that most of the people involved in this work, not most of the people involved, but a lot of the leadership is female. For the first time in my experience of regeneration, which is long.
Hello, Sarah. So we've been having a wander around. We've been in the common room and we've been having a bit of a wander around. Right. We'll go up to the roof after this.
Well done.
But yeah, so Cabaret Mechanical, do you want to say?
Well, I'll try and keep it quick. We're Cabaret Mechanical Theatre and we have a collection of contemporary automata, that is moving sculpture. And we have several of our exhibits on display here. And they're operated by push button in the main. It's the sound of two pirates fighting. This is good for Hastings, this one. We've come here after being nomadic for 23 years. So what Hastings Commons means is that we've come to join like-minded people. And it just seems to be a brilliant fit between the creative people who work at the building and then others who've just come and found us who want to see what we do. Getting distracted. That's the touring things. Then we have retail.
Can I press this one?
Oh, yes. Yeah, press that one. The frog spawn. We were trying to get it sorted.
Oh, hello.
The frog spawn had gone all over.
So I'd come out of Deptford having done a whole load of work on regeneration from the bottom up, but never having purchased any asset for the community. And so I've spent the last, ever since I left, in a way, that's my job now is, first of all, sustainability. So take the building out of the market, decommodify the building in order so it becomes a community asset. Then fix it and as you fix it, bring people in so that they're part of the fixing of it. But then, and third, and therefore not as successful as the first two, try and convince the powerful that this is worth letting happen, that it is worth allowing the enormous energy that lies in these communities to spring out and be harnessed, or be not even harnessed by the council, but be allowed to do this. I'm 30 years into this work and I seem to get more frustrated every year because everything that I'm saying is so obvious and so human and kind and straightforward and right. But it's never enough to be right. You have to be powerful. And I know that, but I refuse it. I take power where we can, so we take freehold power. I mean, what we're trying to do really is, I call it abducting the tools of capitalism. So we try and take their tools. Freehold is a very powerful tool of capitalism. Company and corporation, debt finance, the role of the landlord. You can be a truly good landlord. You can use that power differently. And so taking these tools and turning them upside down, using them disruptively, so using the power of freehold to be inclusive rather than exclusive, really straightforward changes that we can make. And yet the system, this huge sense of a system that feeds upon itself and that capitalism feeds on, is all-encompassing, and that we get little tiddly crumbs to do transformational change with. Even though there are loads and loads of really great funders and great people who want to help and make this happen, it's taken us over 100, 105 now funding sources since 2014 to fund this work, ranging from £2,000 to £8 million. And every single one of those we had to obviously compete for, we had to plan for, we had to explain what we were doing, predict what we would do, monitor what we did do, you know, account for every penny. And then you see the £10 billion of corrupt spend over COVID. None of that happened. No scrutiny. Just How can it be that the right answers are not I'm saying that I know how it can be, because it's no good to be right. You have to be powerful, and the powers that we take are not strong enough to change everything. So we have to change what we can change, and that's what we do. The opposition is partly mindset. Broadly, we don't believe you. You know, it's too fluffy, and people aren't like that. The second kind of mindset is risk aversion. It's this absolute horror of taking any risks and a delight in passing on risks to others. And our entire public sector is based on risk aversion. And in fact, so is the private sector. The private sector is also very risk averse. It's true also, sadly, or to some extent, maybe not sadly, but it is also true of the charity sector, that if you have if we'd only had the Community Land Trust, we wouldn't have done all these things at all. We would never have bought the Observer Building. Even if I'd been on it, you know, it's not about me or any people. It's that a charity has duties to be very careful about the risk to its beneficiaries, quite rightly. So a charity on its own wouldn't have done it. Commercial organisations on their own wouldn't have done it. It was idiotic to do a lot of it. If you were taking a financial look at it, the combination of the social mission and the entrepreneurial risk-taking is what's made it work. And actually, that is our best argument against the opposition, is that we do actually have hard edges. Look, we've got 8,000 square metres of hard edges. We have rebuilt from scratch. Not from scratch, from our legacy. We have darned the fabric of the legacy back into life. So we do have real track record. What's so brilliant about what we do and other organisations like us, which there are, which do exist, is this holistic approach. That it isn't, we're not just about historic buildings, or we're not just about the bingo or whatever. We're about people and their place, all intertwined.
You got a moment? We've been all over the place, been in the common room and everything. Do you want to tell us about the venue?
Yes, we're just scrubbing up after a quite eventful 40th party, which they dressed the place and it looked amazing. Very different than the Books Festival that we had 2 weeks previously.
We'll go out this way now, just see the
fact.
Thanks, man.
Did we start in here? Vaguely? So this, we opened this during the summer. We have a sort of concentric circles thing where we have the commoners, and the commoners are the trustees of the organisations that helped to build it, the team, the staff and the volunteers, the anchors, the people who are helping to build it, and the tenants, because the tenants are all selected, not just on the basis that they need affordable space and that they've got local connection, but also that they're enthusiastic about the ethos and they're willing to make a contribution, willing to do that, look out for each other and look after the place. So the tenants are very important. We've got hot desks, we've got workspace tenants, we've got residential tenants, we've got people who take on whole spaces and then sublet them, you know, so a wide mixture of people. But trustees, team, tenants are the commoners, because they're the people who are actually stepping up to take action, to look after it, to make it real. And then you've got the Community Land Trust members, and some of them are tenants and some of them aren't. And broadly, they support the work and they provide the trustees. So the trustees come from the members and are elected by the members. And then you've got the wider community, which I suppose falls into two parts. The people who use it already, use the spaces, come into the living room, hire the meeting rooms, come to visit or to work, or whatever. And then the people who haven't yet done that, but who could. So it's lots of different circles. And when I say we, I also, it goes back in time as well for me, because I've been here 20 years, and because the story is so important, the story of rescuing the pier first and then of the neighbourhood and the need to really pick up on previous campaigns that had saved the Observer Building, for example, many times before I even got here. You know, the Shoulders of Giants thing is so important at a community level, that we are all living, working with legacy, and that legacy is a mixture of physical left behind legacy and the stories of all the people who came before. So for me, I do use the word we all the time. I can differentiate between me personally and then the we, but the we, whenever I say it, is those that took action, those that stepped forward. And some of them are still here, and some of them have moved on in different ways.
So this is the Eric Hall of the Observer. The deep tunnels underneath the building into the cliff face. And this will all be opened up as part of
the next stage of renovation. But it's so much fun down here because it's always the same temperature and it's quiet. Let's see if I'm just going to try and get a torch. So groundwater, it's not leaks or anything. Well, we don't know whether it's leaks. There's more water now than there seems to have been. So probably this will become a fern garden. Because not the whole thing, but some of it. To just adapt and just say, that's okay, it's wet that bit, but let's just make a nice walk through. We have this mix of spaces. We've got homes where people have lived in them since 2016. It's a difficult balance because we're balancing all the time, managing well and nurturing the spaces we've got with developing new ones, and obviously all the different sorts of financing of that. We have a lot hanging over us all the time. It's not so much the financing as in raising the money, although that takes enormous amounts of energy, but trying to get to a position where it's all sustainable is difficult. The reason we've had all these separate grants is that funders fund projects, individual, and often they only fund little bits of projects. We're trying to do neighbourhood transformation, and we're trying to do it over decades. Somebody once said, how many buildings do you need to buy for it to be sustainable? And I don't know, you know, never knew the answer to that. Like, they meant sustainable both in terms of, like, financially sustainable for itself, but also for the neighbourhood. Would, in order to really protect against gentrification, what would you need to do? And there is no answer to that, because we can't protect against gentrification. It's happening all around us. The rents are mad now, and of course they're still much, much cheaper than London. My job title is Chief Executive Officer and Commoner at Large, and it's the Commoner at Large bit that I insisted on having, that I absolutely am so committed to now. And having been here so long, it's really important to remember what's gone before and to keep passing that on. So keeping the memories, holding on to some of that vision, doing some of the partnership work locally, but more doing the writing, the talking, the sharing and the supporting other people. So there should be 6 flats on this floor and 6 on one. So this will be a bar and it will serve out onto the roof terrace out there, which will be a public roof terrace, which you can, so you can order drinks, but you don't have to. It's publicly accessible. And it is pretty superb space with gorgeous rooftop views. The other view you get from here is a view of regeneration. So you see the buildings just over there, which are rather ugly, late 90s, early 2000s office blocks. They were built with public money, every last penny, and they were built as corporate headquarters. That was during a time when the council felt that the regeneration of the town should turn away from the sea, but they said the sea was old-fashioned, and so it should focus on things like that, which is just so awful. Nobody was going to move their corporate headquarters to Hastings with the rubbish road, with the, you know, terrible trains, all of that, and extreme stigma. So that was never going to happen. So it was a bad idea from the start. It went into liquidation really quickly. It was sold out to the University of Brighton for almost no money. But they only stayed for 8 years, and then they pulled out, and they now own all the buildings. So now they're flogging the buildings, and all that money is going back to Brighton. But this is so beautiful. This, when we first got this, you know, it was all boarded up. In fact, it had some windows in, but they were really weird, like lots of old-fashioned windows that they'd managed to squidge together. So now we've put in triple glazed windows throughout. The whole building is air source heat pumped. We've got rainwater harvesting. We're going to have solar panels when the roof's finished. But, you know, it's about really saying we're committed to these buildings and we're going to make them work.